It is the night. You are sitting under the night sky, stargazing as you often did over the million years of your existence.
I've seen these stars move.
And yet these are the only thing which sort of remain. Their movement over the ages is the only thing which you found again each time you came back through the ages, as you are this being inhabiting a human body, a being from the dawn of time and beyond. You are a Nephilim, condemned to inhabit human bodies.
Forever.
Forever. Could you describe yourself?
My simulacrum is called Philotius, and he's a warrior who's been fighting in these long campaigns. So if you imagine in history books, it's the sandals tied up the legs, the helmet and the fighting garb, which includes a skirt, which is a great look for me. Good looking guy with red hair, fiery brunette kind of hair and brown eyes, and very determined, a kind of handsome, but not so kind of a super sharp guy. So he kind of goes along with the flow. He does what he's told. And inside, as Valeria, you know, that kind of really rails against how she feels. Although she's controlling this body, it's trying to resist what she would wish to do. And that is to be, Valeria wants to command her own destiny. Throughout the eons, having to rely on these humans who are not as subtle or powerful has been a bit of a trauma.
The night is also made more pleasant for you, more calming, as you hear the sound of the waves on the shore and the crackling of a fire next to which you are sitting. You went there, you went apart from everybody else, because these things, this crackling fire close to you, the smell of that fire and its sound and the sound of the wave are hiding the smell of another fire, a much bigger fire.
Oh no.
A fire of which you've been one of the architects,
of
the initiators, but in the end, you did not want it to be part of it, disgusted about what has been happening.
I feel I know what you're referring to is the skirmish that we've had with Troy, right?
As you're next to this fire right now, Troy is burning. Troy is being sacked by the Greeks, along which you've been fighting for all these years. But you couldn't take part to that anymore.
My conscience has kicked in, and now I'm regretful on the beach by myself, contemplating. Now I've created this horror. What is the next step? What do we do? So I'm praying to Lilith, well, the memory of Lilith and her actions, and more importantly, to the moon, because I'm considering that being of this, stealing these bodies and the way that your lives go is a black and evil way. So I feel I have heard these rumors, and there may be an option for me to transform from one creature, one being, to another. Is that right?
That's what you think. Maybe you could reproduce what Lilith herself did ages ago, back in the time where the Atlantis fell, when your domain, the domain of old Nephilims called Kaims at the time, when you lost all your powers and a meteorite fell from the sky, destroyed Atlantis and took all your powers from you, pretty much all your powers, and the humans which you had created raised again their master as they were their slaves. forging weapons with the metal from that meteorite.
Like kryptonite, right?
Exactly. A kryptonite called Orichalca.
Orichalca.
As they were forging swords with this Orichalca, swords which were capable of destroying your real magical
essence.
Being.
Yeah.
And also, as you found out that because of this meteor, you could not be just yourself floating in the elemental fields as you were. You had to inhabit a body, preferably inhabit the body of a human being. You were chased, you were hunted by those secret societies with the secret of Orichalca. And then Lilith and her followers found out that something hidden in the pentacle of Moon Nephilim, Lunar Nephilims, or Onirims as they are called, something hidden deeply in their lunar pentacle could allow them to turn into something different. Something which could resist Orichalca.
And what's the name of this something different?
These were called the Selenims.
So I find myself, Valeria, inhabiting the body of this soldier who is grieving, praying to the moon to try and find if there could be a way that I could also join the Selenims.
Welcome among
the Valeries.
Nephilim, one of my favorite games. We mentioned it often. We interviewed Kenneth Hyde in Dragonmead. There was an episode of System Mastery, and there was an After Tour episode with me and System Mastery. And here it is. This is the Rollies podcast own episode about Nephilim.
Yay!
We mentioned the game already with someone who's back before he leaves. Willem, you are leaving London.
Yes, I am leaving London. I'll still be there in podcast land. Let's be honest, a lot of the people listening don't necessarily need to be in London, so I'll still be available. But if you listen to the release, you've heard me before, the birthday episode where I actually interviewed Callum.
And I knew I should trust you with that task because you have your own podcast.
That's right. I have my own podcast, the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast.
Which I recommend. It comes out on a very regular basis every month.
You're putting me on the spot because I again missed to record another episode, and anyway, it's coming out infrequently right now because I need to, anyway.
Another voice you may have heard already from our Dragonmead episode, Mira.
Hi.
You're a big star of podcasting now. I've heard you guest on many, many podcasts. I heard you in the Formal Gamer today.
Yeah, well, what you get to do is go play games with people who know their beans. So you have these wonderful experiences. And it's quite nice dipping in and being a guest on somebody else's podcast is all of the fun and none of the pressure of sorting out the microphone.
That's an excellent call. And then we've got a newcomer. Welcome, Robert.
Hello.
First of all, I pick you three for an actual play, which will be part of this episode. And second, I thought it was nice because the three of you have a rather different experience with the game. Willem, you've got, I would assume, a classic experience as a French living in France and knowing about Nephilim in France.
Yeah, and I've talked about it in another podcast with friends in France, the podcast Les Voix d'Altaride, because it's one of the first actual role-playing games I discovered in France and that I really, really loved. So I have an experience from it from my teenage years.
Then we've got Robert, Englishman, as English as they come, but who do happen to speak French and to have a passion about Nephilim as well.
Yeah. I got into Nephilim in the 1990s through the American edition. Basically, they were supposed to release a Selenium supplement for American Nephilim, and that never happened. And just by accident, I went to Leisure Games and I realized that they had a load of the French multisim second edition supplements.
The Selenium supplement is a gorgeous one. I mean, I own a bunch of them. It's one of the things I'd always love to own as a campaign, but never have so far.
Jeremy's got the first edition Selenium, which I think is a lot better than the second.
That's the one I have, sorry, yeah.
It was the first thing I bought because I figured that would never be published in English, and I bought the Livre Noir, which is the spells for Selenium, and I also bought the first part of Les Chroniques de l'Apocalypse, Testament, L'Assemblée du Seuil, and most importantly, the second edition rules, which are brilliant. They're like 400 pages long. And, you know.
And then we've got Mira. This actual play was your first experience of Nephilim. Yeah,
so you told me that this was an opening to come play with you guys, and I jumped at it. I did not know anything about the game, and you instructed me specifically, don't look anything up. So I was telling all my friends in gaming groups, oh, I'm playing this game Nephilim. And they were like, ooh. And I was like, but don't tell me anything. And that made it quite an interesting experience. It was certainly a very adrenaline-filled experience for me.
This is a good segue, because I was just about to ask whether we should remind listeners what Let Nephilim is about. Who do you think is the best person to sum up for listeners if anybody doesn't know about
it? I think we're going to take things right from the start. What would be your explanation of what is a tabletop role-playing game?
A tabletop role-playing game, for me, is basically an opportunity to get friends together, and you decide on the theme of the game. So whether you're going to become a space cowboy or an elf riding through a forest. And then there's an accompanying set of rules, and it normally involves dice, and the more pretty dice, the better. And also maths, which I'm not such a big fan of. That's my interpretation. How about you?
You don't actually need pretty dice, but they do help. Someone's describing tabletop role-playing games as pen and paper games, but you don't actually need the pen and paper necessarily. The action takes place in your imagination.
My favorite definition that I got from the conversation I had with John Wick, which is role-playing games are collaborative storytelling games.
Hang on a minute. Did he meet John Wick or Keanu Reeves?
No, it was just John Wick. He's a role-playing game creator, not Keanu Reeves.
Oh, I'm less impressed now. Carry on.
Of course, there's not that impressive. There's only Callum who's impressed. So the definition was, it's a collaborative storytelling game. I think it's one of my favorite definitions of a role-playing game. And you can even go a collaborative storytelling game in which characters are, you interpret different characters during the game. But even that, like some more modern role-playing games don't necessarily even do that.
One of the old publishers of role-playing games was called Theatre of the Mind Enterprises. And that's a really good summation of what a role-playing game is, the Theatre of the Mind. I suggested that it's close to improvisational theatre. But I did an evening course in drama, and the improv I thought it was going to be like role-playing games, and on the whole, it wasn't. It was a very different thing. So I'm not sure if that comparison holds.
It's the night, and it's raining heavily. You're at the wheel of your car, and you're driving.
And I'm on that mission.
You're on that mission. Could you describe yourself?
Got dark, dirty, not been washed in a while, hair that is rough all over the place, a little bit longish, it hasn't been cut in a while. Really thin, haven't been eating much. Quite tall, but in a very small car, so it's just like looked a little bit cramped. What time of year is it again?
You are approaching the summer. You are on the 17th of June.
So I am wearing a colorful Fête de la Musique t-shirt from last year, like Zebda.
Got a tradition with Innominé Satanis of name-dropping French bands.
But like it's just a dirty old t-shirt. It's not been washed for a while. It has a few stains. Wearing jeans with holes in them. Glasses, just like short, little dark-rimmed glasses. Just kind of long-faced, a little bit of a beard.
This character is driving through the night, barely seeing just the light of your far
headlights.
There's the sound of your windshield cleaner going on, pushing away the rain. And there's also the sound of a kind of a little bumping now and then coming from your trunk.
Yeah. It's just noise. That's fine. Wait a few minutes. We're almost there. And I'm smoking.
So there's smoke in the car.
There's smoke in the car, and it's a bit, and I put the heating to the max as well. Very hot, and windows open because I'm smoking. I've got like my eyes a little, because by night you can notice slightly that they're a little bit reddish, and slightly, or at least you would notice that something going on with them. And I usually say I just got those contacts.
Well, you think you're approaching your destination, which was some kind of crossroad, somewhat far in the suburbs of Paris, in the countryside. And as you approach the rendezvous point, which was given to you in your mission brief, you see someone who seems to be indeed standing on the side of the road.
All right, I'll just take a last drag out of the cigarette, flick it out the window, put another one on the cigarette, a lighter, while I just stop right in front of the person.
you're standing on the side of a road, alone, at night, under the rain, in the middle of a forest, when you see approaching a car.
Probably seen them quite a few.
Actually, you've been standing there for a little while, and a couple already stopped and asked you if you wanted a lift.
They haven't said the code phrase.
Apparently not. But this Peugeot 205 slows down and stops next to you.
Alright, so I just open the door, flick my cigarette out, and go, hey, every Renaissance comes to the world with a cry.
The cry of the human spirit to be free.
Alright, come, it's over here.
Could you describe yourself?
I've probably got quite scraggly hair, like baggy clothes and a sort of, I'm sort of second-hand looking kind of clothes, and jeans and stuff. I just look like this unhealthy, ghastly pallor, really.
Do you want to pick up the package, or what? Where are we going now? Or what's the deal?
You're going to a Nexus. You located a Nexus.
Yeah.
What you did not describe is that you're carrying a duffel bag, which apparently contains a couple of items.
All right, so I've gone into car vision. Can you tell me what Willem's Nephilim looks like in car vision?
Oh, the pentacle looks like just really strong reddish ember that seemed to be consuming reddish dark black.
I'm going
to
go pyre him here.
Yeah.
No, nothing sinister.
No.
And as you say that, you get your presence slightly to that undertone, like there's a little bit of fire burning wood kind of thing going on.
I'm assuming I'm sitting in the back. If you look in the mirror, you'll see that I'm sort of shielding my eyes like this a bit when I'm looking at you, and I'm twitching a little bit, so you probably realise what I'm doing.
Where are you coming from?
I was told to meet you. We've got to get something to a Nexus.
Well, yeah, I know. Do you want a cigarette?
I'll have a Camel.
They're right there, dude. It's just like on the in between the two seats, but there's just a pack. So where are we going now?
I can give you directions. We're going to the ruined chapel. There's a Nexus in there, and we need to bail an artifact.
Wait, you got her status, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I got the special delivery.
Do I know what he's talking about?
The body in the trunk I'm talking about.
You hear a faint bump coming out of the trunk. No, that he says that.
Shall we get her out or leave her there until we get to the chapel?
Well, oh, let's just leave her there. I mean, I don't know how they decide that this was the right person for the job. I mean, essentially, like, how long have you been with the blade anyway? Oh, sorry, sorry, sorry. We don't know each other that well. I'm sorry. All right, fine.
A while. When we get to the chapel, then we'll get him out of the boot.
You got the mic, Robert. What was your first own experience of tabletop roleplaying? Or did you start that hobby?
RuneQuest, original Chaosium RuneQuest. I was reading a magazine, I think it was Fantastic Film, some American science fiction magazine, and there was all these adverts for different role-playing supplements at the back. And they said, well, if you look at our earlier issue, we'll describe what these are, and I couldn't find the earlier issue. So it must be another SF magazine that was described what a role-playing game was. And I was quite, whoa, that's weird. I'm giving that a go. And I was really lucky, I wasn't lucky living in Liverpool, but in a way I was, because there was a really good game shop, which was just called Games, and outside of Liverpool was called Games, known as Games of Liverpool. And they were brilliant. You know, I never played role-playing games before. There's a myth at that time in the early 80s, there were only three role-playing games, Dungeons & Dragons, Traveller, and RuneQuest. That's not actually true. There were always more games like Empire of the Petal Throne, Chivalry & Sorcery, Bushido, and so forth. But they were the three big ones. But the only potential player I had was my sister. And D&D and Traveller said that you needed three players. RuneQuest said you only needed two. So I went RuneQuest because you only needed two players. Good marketing on the part of Games Workshop, who had the license from Chaosium. And I was lucky because I think of those three games, RuneQuest was just an amazing game. It was a very good introduction. I was very lucky.
I won't ask a question to Mira. I will just send people to the episode 18. And I don't remember which part, so they're lost. Willem, what about you?
Firstly, I came across through board gaming and particularly HeroQuest, which I guess is like the gateway drug to role-playing games back in the day. When you start creating your own scenarios and making up your own stories for HeroQuest, and suddenly the characters and the board is not good enough to make those kinds of stories. And then I found out about the German classic Black Eye, L'œil noir.
The Dark Eye. And I think it's that's the way a lot of French role player went, because it was the case also of the founder of La Guilde des Rôlistes Francophones, just exactly the same HeroQuest, Dan Dark Ark, fighting fantasy books.
Fighting fantasy books for sure. And then so the first role-playing game I came across was A Dark Eye, but I actually didn't play it until I met another friend at school who was already playing. And then the first games we ended up playing were Warhammer Fantasy that he had, and he was like game mastering.
You've just reminded me about a game called Talisman that I played when I was really young, and it was kind of wizards but it was all tiles. You couldn't do anything. And then Steve Jackson and Ian Livingston, you just reminded me of those books. So I guess it was in my DNA before I even found D&D. Yeah. But as you say, if you listen to episode 18, you can hear about how my breakup brought me to D&D.
So now time to discuss what brought us together, what we have in common now. Nephilim. Nephilim, French game, published by a company called Multisim, which was created to publish that game, and that game financed many other games. Its creator called Frederick Weil, and the inspiration to start there was apparently Foucault's Pendulum by Umberto Eco, and another book I didn't know about, which is called Poids de son regard by Tim Powers, the stress of her regard.
Is that the English translation of it?
Yes, it's correct.
No, because you asked us to make a list of inspiration, and I was, well, just like arguing with myself about whether how much Tim Powers were close or far from it, because I have a couple of other contemporary games that Tim Powers were direct inspiration for, and I've read a couple of Tim Powers books, but I've not read that one.
That book by Tim Powers is actually on the reading list of one of the American Nephilim supplements.
I've read Last Call, which is one of the main inspirations for Unknown Armies, another one of my favorite games.
As you are trying to concentrate on your prayer and on the sensations from the sea and the fire, not to hear the clamor way, way, way behind you, a figure in a cloak comes out of the shadow. Quite clearly, it's approaching you to come closer to the fire, probably to warm himself or herself.
Okay. I'm going to sit in a position where I could leap up if required, but I'm outwardly going to make the gesture of, welcome, stranger. You're welcome to share the heat from my fire.
Thanks, Greek. Do not fear.
Who are you and what are you about?
I'm just an old man wandering in the night. May I sit?
You may sit. Please sit, old man. Take the weight off. I must say, in my years of experience, you never find a random old man just wandering in the night. Where have you come from?
I come from the Dawn of Ages, just like you.
So can I tell if he is like a Nephilim or a Steranim? Can I tell outwardly by looking?
One way you could tell would be to use one of your remaining abilities, which is to change the way you look at the world, turning into the what is called the Ka vision.
Okay, let's try that.
But in doing so, your eyes would light up brightly and your simulacrum would be shaking with the effort. That's something you can definitely do, but that's something which would definitely be noticed by a human, especially at close range like that.
Okay, so because we're so secluded and we're away from anybody else, and he's just said he's from the Dawn of the Ages, I'm going to take a chance and turn on my powers to check if I can see exactly what kind of person he is.
Okay, great. You can roll Cavision.
So I've rolled 27.
Okay, no problem. Your body starts shaking, your eyes catch fire, and you start peeking through your vision changes from the darkness and the fire. You see luminous fields crossing each other. In front of you, there's a strong field, somewhat strong field from the fire itself, of course, of fire.
Yeah.
The scene exudes of her own watery elemental field. And you look in the direction of the old man. The only thing for you to see in the place where he should be, you cannot see his features, his body. You cannot see anybody's features when you are looking at the world through this way. You can only see what they emanate in the fields as a column of usually solar ka, which is the ka of the humans. And there, in place of this solar ka, of another elemental ka, which would be the case for Nephilim, the only thing you see is darkness.
Oh, wow.
It's a black shape against the fields that you can see.
So I now know he's telling the truth. He is not a normal human. And I say, why have you sought me out?
Actually, I thought you were the one who sought me out.
Well, you came up to my fire, so...
And you prayed to my
master. You heard my prayers! Okay, so I... Oh, is he sitting down yet? The old guy?
Yeah, he's sitting down. He's got a sort of a big robe, something thick which should protect him from the wind of the night, grayish. It made sense that you didn't see him coming, although you might think now that he had extra abilities in that field.
Okay.
But you cannot really tell if he's got something. When he sat, it didn't seem he had any kind of weapons under that robe, but you couldn't tell for sure if he's hiding stuff under there.
Okay, so I'm going to reach across to him to try and clasp his hand in greeting. And I say, is it true that there is a way for me to be another way?
He lets you take his hand and take it in both of yours. There is indeed, as you know, there's a way. And you have everything that's needed to follow this path, if you are willing to.
Did you make this decision yourself? For you? Or have you always been the way you are?
Just like you before, I've not always been this way. I've been this way for a long time. I've been this way since the age of Lilith. I was one of the first on her side.
One of the original followers. So, and do you have any regrets? Did you make the right decision?
When times comes, I question some of my actions and decisions. It's not a simple life. There are definitely privileges, no matter how limited they are right now compared to the time when we were part of Atlantis. You still have the ability to shape the elemental field, to see them, to touch them, no matter how little. Should your host perish, you can find another one. These are not things which I'm allowed to do anymore.
Okay. So, what must I do?
Well, you're the only one who can take the decision.
Oh, this is hard.
The decision is not for you to take right now. I cannot turn you here in those conditions.
Okay.
You must engage in a journey to come to my domain. And there, if this is your decision, I will turn you into a creature of the Black Moon, just as I am.
Okay. I accept your proposition. Where must I journey?
The when is as important as the where.
Okay.
You will have to come to my domain on the first day of winter.
Okay.
This will be in a couple weeks. However, beware. Should you not make it in time, should you miss the first day of winter in a couple of weeks, you would have to wait decades before they open again, when the day of Cronus will meet the first day of winter.
Oh, I'm used to hanging around for millennia, but now I know there is something to seek and a mission that my heart could be truly involved in. I don't think I will delay.
You will find my domain in the plain of Thessaly, where the Pineus River bends as it leaves the Pindus Mountains. This journey will be dangerous, and you will need people at your side, people with gifts similar to yours.
It might be hard to find people prepared to potentially betray their own being.
you don't have to find people who would be willing to turn themselves. That's not the point.
Okay. I just need to find some companions.
Indeed.
Okay.
Considering the urgent nature of your journey and the fact that many of your current companions would be probably willing to go home instead after those years of siege here at Troy, the idea of grabbing hold of this might motivate them. And he unfolds a rather large piece of cloth.
Ooh.
You see a large piece of cloth he was hiding under his robe. And when you look at it, it almost seems like it's shining.
Like a magical nature.
Yeah, but you never seen something quite like that. It's got very, very faint. You don't think a regular human would notice that.
Okay.
It's got a very, very faint glow coming out of it. Something reminding you of a solar car, like from a human.
Oh, wow. So does this have magical properties? Would it help me? Should I use it as a bribe or should I use it? Will it give me powers to help persuade people to follow me?
Oh, you won't have it.
We are seeking this?
You will be seeking this with your new companions.
This isn't a golden fleece, is it? Because Odysseus used to talk about that all the time. His friend Jason found it.
You see him having a slight smile at the corner under the light of the fire. Well, tonight one might be more interested in the fact that this was an object used in the dramatic end of Agamemnon.
Valeria, she recoils. Can this be? Is this the blanket that was used to murder the king? I heard rumors that he was betrayed and killed in his own bar, smothered with a blanket.
I would be you, I would not spread that rumor. The secret societies and other Nephilims are not keen on this information being spread out. They already replaced the body with someone to look exactly like Agamemnon. His wife doesn't know of his murderous passing tonight.
So, did you have any hand in this?
I didn't, but I recovered this. And in this is the essence of Agamemnon, who was not a mere human, but someone made more powerful by the use of esoteric knowledge.
So can I, do you mind if I have the blanket? Can I take that?
I don't think that would be appropriate.
Okay.
But do your journey, come to my domain, inform me of your decision, and I will hand it to yourself or your companions if you prove worthy.
So Valeria thinks about it for about a second and says, the challenge is accepted.
And as you say that, you notice that the old man doesn't seem to be around anymore.
He just vanished. I hate when they do that. He just left.
We would like to have a go at, very briefly, without going into the extensive background of it, to explain what Nephilim is about.
As a new player coming to the table, who's clutching this microphone like you will not believe. Basically, my experience as a completely new player is you come to the game and you have a body that you are inhabiting as a once all-powerful being now restricted by your human body. And you can die in this game and you don't do saving throws. You become another human and you regenerate a little bit like Doctor Who. Was my first impression at the table.
It's a good first impression.
Should I give I would automatically go for the broad view of it, but that's also because I've read so much of the material. The idea and the genre is contemporary occult, reading a hidden history behind the world, that the world started with these immortal beings that you're incarnating, but that lost everything, and that now are condemned to go through the ages and trying to regain their power to be able to achieve transcendence. And the only way to do that is to inhabit those human bodies. And they have a bunch of different hosts and challenges. One of the things I love the most about it is that it's rereading the entire of human, well, human and all of history in quite imaginative ways, taking a number of different conspiracy theories, real history, and all of it together and mixing it up so that you are playing these characters that are finding out about the hidden mysteries and hidden history of the world in order to achieve transcendence.
I think I'm right in that some Nephilim, the members of the Moon Arcanum, they take over bodies of animals while human beings. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
I didn't mention, actually, that is a correct point that the immortal beings you're incarnating are elemental beings. They usually hearken from one of the four traditional elements plus the moon. So water, fire, air, earth, and moon.
I don't know if there's a Western occult tradition that has the moon as an element, but certainly in RuneQuest, the moon is an element.
Each element is associated with characteristics. So Nephilim of that element will have a tendency to be stronger in that specific thing. So air is intelligence, intellect in general.
And each one of them is associated to one of the fantastical or supernatural beasts of mythology.
That's your metamorphosis. So air, for instance, the character I played, which I took my pseudonym from, Callum, was an air Nephilim or, what's it called? Nephilim of air. What is it called again? Moon, it's Onirim. We got fire, it's Pirim. We've got earth, it's Firim. We've got water, it's Hydrim. And we've got air, which are Aeolims. So my metamorphosis was an angel. And as you said, the Nephilim has lost most of their power, so they're just a shadow of what they used to be. And just to remain exist, they have to possess the body of humans, or in some instances, animals.
Actually, do we want to reveal secrets of the game or not so much? Because it is kind of one of the traditions of different styles of role-playing games that you have secrets in the game. And one of the objectives of running a campaign is to discover the secrets of the universe. How much do you want to reveal in this? I don't know.
That's an interesting point, actually. First of all, it's a game of secrets. So there's been an episode with System Mastery before, and they went through the book, and I tried to go through the book again as they were. And I must say, going through the story step by step of what happened even before the start of human history is awfully boring. It's terrible, because as a Nephilim, or at least as the way I was playing it, a lot of these things are stuff you forgot, stuff which are kept secret between Nephilims and from humans, and even secret human societies are keeping the secret. But the fun of the game is to find out about this history as you are playing. Second, System Mastery was saying that Vampire the Masquerade was a game of powerful beings doing smooches in the shadows. The fun of Nephilim, which might not seem like fun to many people, is going through libraries, finding stuff, investigating and discovering stuff, because that's how, as a Nephilim, you hope to regain that power you used to have.
You're absolutely right, and this is how I remember it, and I think the emphasis of the French game was very much on discovering secrets, exploring the world, even though you do have threats and you do have enemies, which is one of the main reasons that you're playing these immortal beings that are a shadow of their used previous selves, because they had enemies that kind of half destroyed them at some point in the far distant past. But Robert, I heard that the English-American translation of the French book had a lot more emphasis on enemies and on combat, putting more of the focus on the game towards beating threats in combat, which I don't know if that's true or not, or if you had a chance to compare that.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from with that, yeah. I was looking through the only scenario supplement that Chaosium published, which is Serpent Moon. And some of the scenarios, they wouldn't be out of keeping in a present day like Cthulhu now. Also, I think the occult background for the American edition, it went along its own path, which was different from the French version. I don't think the French version thinks that every historical event was caused by either Nephilim or human secret societies, because I seem to remember that in Nephilim second edition, the French Revolution began with the French nobility and it got out of control and turned into a mass political revolution. I think in the American version, it was caused by secret societies or Nephilim. It seems that they caused everything, and every famous person was a Nephilim or a human secret society member.
Something which was pointed by System Mastery, the US books were lacking hooks along the book, unless the very last page where it's only hooks for you to play, which personally I didn't find very good. And one of the hooks is actually doing something entirely the opposite of what the French edition did, which is to say, you know what? There's this guy, he's very, very racist, etc. today. Turns out he's a Nephilim. Turns out he's been very racist and a Nephilim in the 30s. This guy was Hitler. And the French edition goes out of its way to say, nobody knows, nobody thinks, there's no reason to think that someone like Adolf Hitler was a Nephilim. This hooks like involving Mexican cartels, drug stuff. It's, yeah, I thought it was a bit, meh.
Well, it feels more geared towards action. You know, like you go into World War II and drug cartels and everything else. So you're probably gearing and guiding the players more to a lot more action-filled stuff, which, on the other hand, is true. Or at least, I mean, this is very stereotypical, right? But Nephilim as a game and as a French game tends towards the more intellectual, a lot of reading, a lot of history, a lot of, as you said, like going to look and peering through a library about ancient facts, which can be a lot of fun. But I mean, I'm also pro having action scenes inside of a game, right?
Can I just say that the first scenario in the first volume of Les Chroniques de l'Apocalypse, it begins with an almighty fight in which the scenario writers think that at least one of the Nephilim will lose their simulacrum. And later on, they investigate a building and it gets blown up with a bomb. So there's a hell of a lot of death and destruction in that scenario.
Okay.
And a lot of investigation as well. But it begins with an almighty fight, and then there's an investigation.
I would just say that when I was playing Nephilim, we had a lot of epic actions with jumping between buildings with large swords and shooting at each other with Templars. But it was not... Yeah, it was always a moment in a story. I don't know if you take like something like Star Wars or Star Trek, the general theme is science fiction and technology, etc. While in Nephilim, it was libraries or ancient knowledge, but with your action scene in both cases, and that's what we were having. So you drive towards the destination, you give the direction, somewhere not far from a place called Provence. So you arrive there, I assume you stop the car. It's night, it's raining, you don't notice anyone hanging around, and you specifically search for a Nexus, which isn't stable, so it will turn on and off depending of the different alignment of planets. And you know this one should be active tonight at this moment, but it's not stable enough to interest whatever group to hold it or keep an eye on it.
Dude, what's your name again?
Pete.
Pete. You can call me, well, I mean, Jean in general, but you can call me Dal.
Dal?
Yeah. You call me Jean or Dal. Dal for you, but Jean, stage name, special secret name. Huh?
You got 30% in English, so your English is okay. I based your skill of your character on what I assume is, I guess would have 30% in English.
I have no idea.
Yeah, we go.
Let me just assume if I understand. If I'm the boss or he's the boss? I think he's the boss.
It's not specified.
No, it's not. Right. All right, so what are we doing now, boss?
Shall we get her out of the trunk?
So you stop the car and there's a path going further in the woods. Apparently you couldn't go it with the car right in the middle of wherever you...
Where's the Nexus?
It's going to be in the crypt underneath the ruined chapel.
I'll take care of the body. And so I check everywhere if there's nobody around. I just open the trunk. She's presumably attached, right? I mean, she's tied up or something.
Yeah, you tied her up yourself in the trunk. There's a young woman. Apparently she's been crying.
Do I know who this person is?
No, it's the first time you see her. It's a young woman, not very tall and moving. She's...
I just
awake.
Pick her up and put her over my shoulder.
She tries to move around.
Okay, well, in that case, I just put her back down and say, listen, do not move, be quiet, or I'm going to put you unconscious again. Do you want that?
She stops struggling against you.
And I would, like, look her in the eyes where she could see this crazy red eyes going on.
She seemed absolutely terrified.
Okay, well, I'll put her over my shoulder and...
Cannot tell if her own eyes are very red with probably...
So we need her for the ritual, is that it?
Well, you need to put the Nephilim witch's trap in that stasis, that Nephilim called Valeria. You need to incarnate her.
Oh, she's the empty that we need to fill.
Yes, I thought you were the boss of the mystery. What the hell's going on here?
I thought maybe that was just what you did as a hobby. I don't know.
But, you know, of course not. No. I would not poor women like that. It's just because the blade told me it's the mission. Valeria needs to be incarnated in this woman, poor woman, of course. But that's just the job.
All right.
Okay. It's a sad state of affairs that we have to do this, but, you know, it's the way it goes.
You go through the woods carrying her under this pouring rain. When you finally approach the crypt, it stops raining. You go down the crypt, you turn into your vision car, you indeed notice that there's a weak but sufficient nexus going on. Apparently it's not going to last very long. You lay your victim.
I look at her in the eyes and say, I'm very sorry. I'm so sorry, Madal, but you'll be fine. Don't worry about this. This is like you're like onto something bigger now.
You'll forget all about it unless you're going to shoot it. Don't worry about it.
Well, actually, she's not going to really forget it, but, you know, you'll be fine. You're onto something bigger and better now. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. And I'm really, really, really sorry.
Anyway, I'm going to have Mark out a pentacle and do a Kabbalistic ritual.
So that's what he does as you're telling her you're sorry. You put the stasis of Valeria that apparently is a pendant of some kind made with a fossil. You lay it in the appropriate place and you start saying your incantations and connecting to the field to direct them into the stasis, which start filling in with elemental energy to the point where when it's full, finally you see the Nephilim Valeria emerging of the stasis, wandering a tiny bit around, but quite quickly going into the body of
the young woman.
The young woman.
To make sure we're not completely geeking out about the different values of the translation language, which I'm clearly aware I started, but I'm sorry. But Mira, as somebody who'd never heard about the game, and I'd love to hear your opinion because, like, you followed the instruction not to find out anything about the game, so you're really discovering on the spot. Like, how was it for you?
I found it way more interesting than you guys are making out with this discussion right now. Honestly,
that's why I'm asking.
I understand like about 25% of what you're talking about through playing the game, because I didn't know any of the backstory or, you know, the edition wars or anything, but I was completely, absolutely absorbed in the storytelling and the way that Callum was DMing and embodying these different, you know, struggling people. The backstories I thought were a fantastic idea. I mean, we all came knowing we had certain things about our character and artifacts, which I felt was a really beautiful touch, you know, to kind of have to represent these ideas and then put your own twist on it. If you guys hadn't introduced me to it in this way, I think the amount of literature may have scared me off. This was a fantastic introduction. I mean, I think we all said afterwards it would be great fun to play, you know, because we had fun. It was great.
I think you're right about the amount of literature. I mean, the American edition is about 8 supplements. But the French, there were so many supplements.
You got 72 books which came out.
It's a lot.
Really? Yeah. 72.
No. I can believe that.
Including the 20th birthday thing, the Nephilim initiation. But those last two account maybe for 6 among those.
It's a bit like if you're playing RuneQuest or Torg, you buy a scenario and you can't really run it because you need to have the Testament supplement for this, you need to have the Kabbalah supplement for that, you know.
This is where I'll mention that the first game I ever bought was Torg.
Yes. That's a really great game ruined by an awful system.
So this is the next day. You are on the beach and there's much preparation for the boat to launch. Everybody is very eager to leave those beaches where so many perished, and everybody is very keen to go back home. In the distance, not too far, you see your king, the king of Ithaca, Odysseus, giving orders to set up his own boat alongside your good friend going under the name of
Emmaus, the swineherd of Odysseus.
Emmaus, which you know real name is Kirael, because he happens to be a Nephilim of Air.
Yeah. So I am now Captain Philotius. I am going to go over to Odysseus.
As you approach, Kirael is about to finish one of his distinctive saucy jokes. But you know your king has little taste for the vulgar humor of your Aeolim companion.
before Emmaus can make a joke or say anything, I kind of take him by the arm, gently but firmly. I bow and I say, "Congratulations on a worthy victory, my liege. I need to ask of you a boon, and I will need my good friend Emmaus. I have heard rumours of a Greek stash of rare and precious gemstones and jewels hidden away, and I would like permission to take your ship to go and find these."
"You served me well, Philotius. I will miss you. I was hoping you would sail alongside me towards Ithaca, but you and Emmaus, of course, are free to go. You served me beyond any person has ever served the House of Ithaca."
"My liege, thank you for your generosity and understanding. And do not fear, for whenever you are sailing and you feel that you are missing my influence or my company, look to the wind and I shall be blowing the sails and speeding your journey."
Would you make an empathy check, please?
I roll 72.
As you're saying those words to Odysseus, you can notice that he seems very upset. He seems to be in a hurry to leave, but at the same time, he seems very concerned.
"Before I leave you, there is something troubling you, and you must share this with me."
"What's troubling me is no secret. Some of the warriors do not better than to slaughter and feast on the horses of Apollon, which were behind the wall of Troy."
"Yeah, your men turned into savages. They've embarrassed you."
"Men be savages is one thing, but I'm concerned for the safety of my ships. I fear the gods might not take very kindly what happened."
"Odysseus, I see your future will be treacherous and dangerous, but I do see that eventually you will be reunited with your loved ones."
He raised an eyebrow, a bit concerned by the start of what you were saying, but then put a hand on your shoulder and say, "Good Philotius, you've been always next to me in the biggest struggles. Thank you very much for your advice. I won't forget them. I do indeed can't wait to reach back my family."
"I look forward to seeing you again in our home port." And Philotius is bowing and courteous to the extreme, and as he backs away, he is slowly holding his friend's arm and drawing him away.
"Why did you stop me, Philotius? Why did you stop me? I'm sure the king would have loved the punchline of that story about Zeus turning into a donkey."
"The time has come for us to be free of our slavery."
"Oh, that's brilliant. I can't wait to sail the sea and find some nice beaches so we could lay down and enjoy the sun and the protection of Zeus and follow the precepts of Pan."
"That sounds like a fantastic idea. Now let's get on the ship, let's check we have our rations, and let's go."
"Everything is already sorted, we can embark immediately."
"Okay, we walk up the gangplank and give the order to cast away."
You can notice there's some chatting about what's been going on at the temple of Apollo. Apparently, Odysseus' concerns are shared by some crew members, and they seem conflicted as they are, again, keen to go back to their home, but wary about what the sea is going to be like.
So I would like to use my eloquence to give a rousing talk to the crew. Any of you who are involved with anything that happened in the city against the god Apollo, you need to make your penance and send forth your prayers. Everybody else, we must rally and offer this journey and all the adventures and riches that we find on it to Apollo.
You see some glares being exchanged?
Like happy glances or?
Really concerned. A couple of the glares seems to concentrate on several people which you presume are
the bad guys.
Well, people who were
the
involved.
Defilers.
Defilers of some kind. And someone yells, "We need to do a sacrifice to the god. That's the only way we can regain their kindness."
I say, "Stop that man. The minute that we sacrifice each other is the minute we become lower than animals. Has anybody got a sheep?"
There's a couple goats, but
I was feeling dreadful in my heart, but knowing how superstitious sailors can be, I offer the goat to the men as a sacrifice, but I use the opportunity to bond them in brotherhood and again, use my skills of eloquence to kind of persuade them that we are now a team. We work together and we're on the good side of the gods.
Okay, I think you described very well what you were doing. It makes sense. You're going to roll, but your skill times two.
So I get 50.
You reassure your men. The goat is sacrificed. There's blood on the front of the boat.
Which sailors love.
It's very common that to launch to the sea for the first time a boat, that you would make such sacrifice.
So we did the right thing.
You did the right thing, and people seem reassured that the sailing should go smoothly.
And also, I crack open some kegs of grog. So I christen the journey with alcohol as well. So I think everyone gets like a shot of grog, and then we get to go.
Kirael, the Nephilim, start going on to a song also to the sailors.
A sea shanty.
Ancient Greek sea shanty for the men. And the boat starts. The wind is good. The sails are blowing. And the boat, without too much difficulty, leaves the beach, sailing into the Aegean Sea.
Hooray to our destiny.
Coming back to Nephilim and to use what Mira was saying, a bit I love, and it takes a lot of time, is the character creation system. So because you are this being which has to incarnate in humans, you lived at different times and ages. So in the case of Mira, for instance, her character had possessed a human being at the time of the Stone Age, the Neolithic, and then in ancient Greece, right before the Battle of Troy. And to add a detail about Nephilim, the people fighting Nephilim found a way to trap them, which is to bind them to an object, which you pick randomly. It can be anything from a pendant to a menhir, a henge, which leads sometimes to Nephilim character being truckers with a henge in the back truck. So when a Nephilim dies, either they manage to go to another human body and they remain in that age and that's all cool, or they get trapped back in their object and they can be dormant in that object for centuries, millennia even.
Until somebody purposefully wakes them up, or they're somehow lucky enough that magic, like magnetic lines, fields, come across in a way such that they have enough magic to wake up because they're also magical beings.
Yeah, they're part of the field of magic and they control them. They can shape them a very tiny bit to do most useless spells. But so in the case of Mira, your character, you had lived in ancient Greece, in the Stone Age, and then you had laid dormant all this time. But we actually did that in-game.
But Callum, I need to tell you, until I listened to the podcast of us playing the game, I have no idea how Valeria, my character, was brought back to life. I still do not know. So I'm really interested to hear how that happened and how respectfully my fellow players treated my lifeless body.
Very respectfully, of course.
About that possession thing, one argument which I find is fair and which apparently rubbed the wrong way the people who adapted it to the US version, according to Kenneth Hyde, is this idea that you possess humans and therefore you are villains.
I only thought about that issue when you told me that this was kind of a controversy. And actually, I was thinking, you're right, because normally this is kind of like the bad side of fiction, like the poltergeist, the evil spirit that incarnates in somebody's body. But when we were playing the game, I really felt my Nephilim struggle and needing to exist, you know, within the structure. So I was kind of thinking, well, I feel like my Nephilim would be trying to look after her human counterpart. But then I realized there's no way around it. You've just basically inhabited somebody. You're a body snatcher. But that didn't really stop my enjoyment of the game. I mean, yeah.
I actually ran a Cthulhu by Gaslight Nephilim crossover in which the player characters are investigating someone who's had a rapid change of personality, suddenly become interested in spiritualism and reincarnation. This was Teufel Gautier, and that actually did happen. They were investigating this as a weird occult phenomenon. In that scenario, the Nephilim, I suppose, are the bad guys, yeah.
I mean, I disagree with the idea that you're automatically villains. From the perspective of us talking as humans, yes, I don't want somebody to possess my body, but that's not the perspective of the game. Just like, you know, you could automatically say when you're playing Vampire the Masquerade, you're automatically villains, which I guess from the perspective of the humans being eaten, that's true. But from the perspective of the game, it depends on your actions, whether you're a villain or not, ultimately. So I think that's a little bit reductive and quick to say that you're villains.
I mean, yeah, it's the same thing. You play Risk and you decide you want to take, you know, the continent of Australasia. You know, you're going to have to kill a lot of Australasians, right? But you still play Risk. So
I didn't think of Risk, actually.
That's why I'm here.
The day seems to go fine, the sky is clear, the wind is steady, but as the night falls, a storm gathers upon you in a very, very swift way, almost a natural way. For a good long time, your men concentrate on manning the boat, but at some point the storm is so bad, and again it came so quickly, that a lot of them start breaking, panicking about what's going on, and getting on their fours on the floor, begging the gods to spare them. In that storm, you lose sight of the other boats you were sailing alongside, and you start to be brushed off quite heavily.
Is there anywhere on the ship I can go where I could use my car vision without people seeing me to see what the storm is?
Yes, you can go at the helm, right at the end.
Okay.
You're going to have to hang on to something there, not to fall into the water.
Yeah.
But if you go right at the front, like King of the World style,
yeah.
They shouldn't be able to notice your eyes, and your shaking won't be noticed in the confusion that is going on.
So I'm holding on to the deck, tucking my feet into coils of rope that are on the deck.
Do your car vision first.
Okay, so that's 19.
Your eyes light up, no problem. Definitely there's something, the way the elemental field of air and water are ordered, there's some powerful spell at work here. You suspect that for whatever reason, some Nephilim has been playing with the weather.
Oh, wonderful.
To force that, maybe not upon yourself, but on the whole fleet of the Greeks. Now it's time to roll a strength check.
Okay.
You're just holding onto something.
I got 66. Are you going to drown me?
The boat is shaking. Very large waves hit right at the helm, and you push the side into the water. You really cannot control anything. You just fall plainly into the big waves. You are entirely submerged immediately.
Okay, I am going to swim as hard as I can.
The conditions are really horrible, so it's going to be no multiplication at all.
Seriously? Okay. Yeah, I'm 33.
You start gulping water. You cannot even find the surface of the water.
Can I do anything magical? Can I?
Yes, you could.
Okay, I'm looking at my spells right now.
Nephilim's got big fancy names for its spells, which are very nice when you know them, but very horrible when you need to search
for them. Yeah, okay. Oh my god, I have the best spell ever for this. I cast Pelagic Survival. Allows the caster to breathe any liquid environment with water for 10 minutes. Doesn't ignore the side effect of what might be in this water. And my simulacra will puke liquid at the end of the spell. And I hit 11. So the spell is cast.
Okay, brilliant.
Yay!
You cast the spell. You shape the elemental field of water within your simulacrum and the pentacle, which is your very essence, in order for your simulacrum to accept water as if it was air. And you start indeed breathing the water of the sea. It's extremely salty. Because doesn't prevent anything. It burns in your nostrils and your lungs with the salt.
I'm not having fun. Okay. But I'm alive.
You're alive and underwater.
Philotius is alive, so.
Yeah, Philotius is alive. Can you roll me a swimming check again?
I'm feeling like I might be better at this now. So it's 27. Oh, 54.
You don't manage to reach the surface again. But you're underwater, you can breathe the water for 10 minutes. You're going to try for a while to reach the water. When you do, you see your ship being extremely far. There's no way you'll be able to catch up with it. You start swimming again, and you will swim for a while, getting under the water and breathing that water and feeling the time passing by. And as you're swimming, you feel more and more tired and drowsy. And at some point, you're not even sure anymore if you're swimming or not, or you're fighting sleep. You rocked in all directions by this very hard weather and this very strong storm. And you swim. You're not sure anymore if you're sleeping or not. You wake up soaking wet. You don't recognize your clothes. You don't have your armor anymore. You don't have your skirt. You just have a very simple tunic, which is light blue and very, very thin. You don't remember any kind of fabric like that.
Do I still have my Simulcrone's body? I haven't changed bodies, right?
You look at your hands and you don't recognize them. These are the hands of a young woman.
I'm still completing the Kabbalistic ritual as she comes to, by the way. Ashachachim. Ashachachim. Isha. Isha. Ashachach.
So after coughing and spluttering, I sit up and I say, who are you and what are you about?
Before you do that, you got something blocking your mouth first, so you can.
Oh my god!
And second, you start reaching out into your simulacrum. The first thing you see in her memories is people lining up with parchment in front of you, and you're sitting at a table, and they come to you for advice. No, it's not advice, and they come to you. They want you to write on their parchment. No, it's not parchment. It's something else. It's something you never... Yeah, it's books. It's your book.
I'm a writer.
They're coming for you to sign their book.
I'm a famous writer.
Do you think we can remove the S&M paraphernalia now?
It's not really S&M. Are we done with this? Is she all right?
I'm going to go into car vision and see what she looks like in car vision.
So you look into a pentacle. It's obviously a Nephilim. She is slightly more powerful than you used to be a second ago.
Yeah.
The dominant color, essence, and connection making to the field. It's got a silvery tone, as it is a Nephilim. Or rather, an Onirim, a Nephilim of the moon.
I don't mind the moon per se. It's just the moon, Selenim, you know, there is a connection.
What is it?
Well, moon Nephilim are more likely to become Selenim.
I don't know. Not one of those. I'm keeping her attached. That's
I'm going to say to her, I'm Eligor, I am also a Nephilim.
Oh, but did I know that before? I did, right? So, and what you see chuckling and who nipped the gag away is...
This episode included Solta of Rango, or theme song by Bonded or Roll. Episode 20, that's it. Sorry for the delay to releasing this one. The more familiar among you with the show will know that it always takes me a lot of time to edit actual play sessions. Following the latest trend in format, as I recorded a lot, I decided to split that episode in several parts. I know you will like that. Feel free to give me some feedback about this. Talking about feedback, I'd like to thank Party Naked for rating the show 5-star on iTunes and leaving a very kind review, which I'm going to read right now. I love this show, and it happens to be hosted by one of the sweetest men I know. Wonderful memories of my youth spent tabletop gaming. Wonderful show. Well, thanks so much. I guess I'm very sweet online. I'm not sure I'm as sweet on real life, so I guess you only know me via the internet. But who you are is a mystery, but thanks so much. It helps the show being higher in the search of whatever iTunes and and this way being more likely to be found by new listeners. And it definitely encourages me as I spend evenings and evening editing actual plays. As you know, the Rollist Podcast is a proud member of the RPG Academy network. And it happens that the RPG Academy is going to launch very soon, on April 13, the Kickstarter for the 5th edition of the Academicon 2017. So this takes place in Dayton, Ohio. So if you're based in the US in the area or can afford to travel there, it will be in November from the 10th to the 12th. But ahead of that, on April 13th, so this month, the Kickstarter is going to start. So the Kickstarter each year is set up for the pre-sale to raise funds for deposits, marketing, and other pre-con costs. If you are planning to attend, there's loads of little bonus you can get by supporting the Kickstarter, like badges and special prizes and whatnot. That's it for episode 20, part 1. Please spread the word. I love Nephilim, so it's no secret. I really want with this episode to spread the word about this French game across the world. Tell your friend about this game, share that episode, and send me your comments about how you feel about Nephilim and whether or not they are villains. I think they're a bit villains. I mean, it's not very nice what they're doing to humans. I mean, they have to, but yeah, it's not cool. Anyway, and also if you're interested in the subject, check my episode with System Mastery and check the episode of System Mastery on the US version of the game. See you for part 2, and in the meantime, have good games.
Nós é tipo bem Jesus, todo mundo a gente ama. Ainda mais se for gatinha, rola até levar pra cama. A gente topa tudo, sapatão e bigodudo na hora do piriri. Cai em mim ou travesti.
Vai, Batuque!
Rolê, rolê, rolê. Solta o frango e vem com a gente. Rolê, rolê.
For the boat to launch, everybody is very eager to leave those beaches, those damn beaches, where what did I say? Where so many Greeks perished, and everybody is very keen to go back home.